G'day, champions. Hope this finds you well. Welcome to the U Project, is the name of the show. My name is Craig Anthony Harper, but you can call me Harps. Tiffany Ann Cook, you can call her Tiffany Ann Cook. She's over there at TYP Central pushing the buttons and hopefully today actually recording the show. Hello, Tiff.
I'm never going to live that down, am I, Harps?
Well, for those of you who don't know what happened the other day, Tiff and I recorded a breakthrough, a milestone, a groundbreaking, a never-to-be-repeated, once-in-a-lifetime, breathtaking conversation, exploration, dissection of human performance, and somebody didn't press the record button.
Yeah.
That's okay. We roll on. And I got a very sheepish phone call about 2 minutes after I got off the Zoom chat.
Do you know how many times we've had a few podcasts since, and I can't tell you how many times I look at the screen and then I look over at my other little Zoom interface and I just look for all the shiny red buttons and I look at, you know, when you just don't trust yourself anymore, you're like, what have I stopped doing that I always do that makes things work?
I wonder, I mean, I think we all do that in some way, not just with, anyway, let's say hello to our guests. G'day, Kyle. How are you?
Good, mate. How are you?
Mate, we're very good. We're very good. Have you ever done something similar where you thought you'd done something, you did a good job and you figured out, or halfway through you realised you'd fucked up?
I'm on the TIFF one, actually. Like, we run educational courses and I've definitely been on the receive, on the end of not pressing the record button and missing recording of vital education. So I feel your pain on that one.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Well, I think for the most part, like for us, it's been amazing. If we could only do podcasts in this studio, well, we wouldn't have had a podcast after about March last year because nobody could come into my house. But it's been an exercise in adaptation and exploration and flexibility and creativity at times. But here we are.
And here you are, 500, mate. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, we did episode number 501 earlier today, so I think you will be 502. So thank you for joining us. Yeah, 500.
I'll take it.
It's been an interesting ride. And I think we're a bit better than we used to be, but, you know, hopefully we've still got a way to go and hopefully we'll be here for another 500 or so. Where are you today? You're in Queensland, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm back at home on the Gold Coast. Well, I say home with this very strong Manchester accent, but I'm home on the Gold Coast.
What are you working on now? We know that you work with PH360 with Dr. Cam. What are you working on right now?
Actually, at the minute, I'm working on a keynote that I'm looking at presenting soon on living your potential. So it's essentially looking at the concept of, you know, tapping into your purpose, or kind of trying to get an idea of what that purpose looks like. And then from there, you know, it's one thing to know what that North Star is or the direction that it is that you're trying to go. And then it's another thing to actually go about that, utilizing the natural strengths that you've been given. So there's this concept of purpose plus genius and using that to work towards your potential.
Oh, let's explore that. That's a good topic. Let's talk about that. About 17 seconds before we started rolling, I said, what are we talking about? And you went, fuck, I don't know. What are we talking about? And I went,
but you know what? I was just going to say, like, I think that's what I love about this. Like, I've done podcasts over the time talking about personalized health. Often I've gone on to the podcast as the expert. I'm going to use that term very, very loosely because I don't see myself as an expert, but, you know, an expert in personalized health. And often I'll just kind of talk the same narrative that I always talk, and then it's, you know, off you go. But I think with what you guys do, I think it's awesome. It, you know, the conversational piece, the way we just kind of riff it. This is the third time we've been on, and each time it's been completely different. We've gone down different rabbit holes, and I think that's got to be a secret to the success, mate, for sure. Well,
thank you. I mean, we do what we can, but I don't like planning. It, not because I'm lazy, but because, like, you think about if you're going to go meet someone for the first time or even for the 27th time, be it a colleague or a friend or somebody that you just got a connection with, you don't go, right, I'm going to meet Kyle for coffee at 12. I better sit and prepare what I'm going to say to Kyle at 12 with coffee. It's fucking ridiculous. And I wonder what he'll ask and how will I answer that and what questions will, like, you know, for me, that's, that doesn't, well, it's a dumb idea on a podcast. It's a dumb idea in general, but it's a dumb idea on a podcast as well. And I think one of the, right, I don't mean this disrespectfully to anyone, but I think once the camera starts rolling, in inverted commas, some people get very nervous. And so the ability to have an in real time organic conversation where they don't have an awareness of an audience, I think for a lot of people, that's a challenge. So if I'm talking to you now, or I'm talking to you before we start rolling, for me, it's the same, because I'm not distracted by a potential audience. And I think that makes the best listening experience for, you know, our friends and fans and followers. Is it's just like, I would talk to you this way and have this conversation with you, whether we were recording or not.
Yeah.
And that brings out the most authentic experience. All right. So I'm interested in, let's talk about living your potential. That's the title of today's show. I've already got it in the first 1 minute. Fucking hell. Thanks for giving me that. I don't even need to think about it. Appreciate that. So we are always talking in this fitness, health, wellness, high performance, psychology, personal development, self-help, professional development. We're always talking about exploring our potential and tapping into our genius and finding our purpose and path and truth and all of those very cliche things, right? I think one of the challenges is that people have no idea what their potential is, right? Yeah. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, in order to be able to really tap into our potential, that is what is actually possible for us. And I mean, potential with what? With creativity, with physiology, with building a business, with, you know, cognitive function. I mean, what aspect of me are we talking about? But to really tap into that and to exploit that and to use more of it, we have to get uncomfortable, right? Like, yeah. If we want to explore the outer limits of your physiology, let's say just hypothetically, well, let's say Tiff, who's a boxer. If she wants to see how good she can be as an athlete, one, and how strong and fast and powerful and quick and how much muscular and aerobic endurance she can create, and then how well she can execute under pressure and defend and punch people in the face and become a champion, well, that's an example of exploring one's potential, but there's a huge amount of work and pain and suffering and discomfort involved in that, right? So yeah. The idea of tapping into your potential is one thing, but the process is another.
Yeah. And this is, you make a really good point on that, because on one hand, when you look at potential, the idea, there's an idea within that saying itself that there's already a point set. There's already something there that's unrealized. And then you're navigating through life, knowing it or not knowing it, trying to understand or uncover or tap into what that thing is. And especially with the work we're doing, you know, we talk from a place of set that purpose. So you've got that kind of end goal in mind. So for Tiff, let's say she's getting out there to be at whatever level boxer she wants to be to live out that potential. And within that, you've then got your kind of, from a genetic standpoint, some of your natural strengths, your natural talents, your natural abilities. So that's physiologically and behaviorally. So this is obviously what we explore in the personalized health and behavior realm. 50% of behaviors are genetic. So even the behavioral stuff, the research in behavioral genetics is now saying that every single trait can actually be tied back to genes. Now, it's not just one gene, it'll be clusters. So there's these pieces of us or parts of us that are set. And then there's obviously everything else, which is open for interpretation. Okay. And we've had this, I know we've had this discussion on previous conversations where we've talked about genes versus environment, but I think it's a really important point, because what you just said before is we have to struggle, and there will be struggle. And even when you do absolutely everything that's in alignment with your potential, with your purpose, with your natural, what we call genius, your natural biology, genes and things like that, there's still going to be struggle. But it's how you engage with that struggle. So, you know, you can kind of go through life trying things and swimming upstream and going against your kind of natural qualities, let's say. And yes, you'll grow from the experience, and yes, you'll grow from what it is you've kind of been playing around within that realm. But there's also another way of looking at things, which is if you actually understand more about your biology, more about who you are, you can actually create a bit of a roadmap that, while it might, you know, it's still going to be a struggle, there's a way of going with the flow a little bit, if that makes sense. So that's what we're playing around with. It's this idea of there's natural qualities built into our biology. If we can understand them and tap into what those are, then the navigation of reaching potential or unlocking that potential or living out that dream is going to be a little bit easier than it is if you have no idea of those things and you just kind of go out there with no roadmap whatsoever and you try different things and, you know, you're kind of in the wilderness a little bit.
Now, you know, I'm always dubious when people quote me scientific data and it's exactly 50%. I'm like, really? It's not 49. It's not 51.
It's 50.
It's 50. Is it though? And is it 50 for everyone, mate? Is it 50 for everyone?
Interestingly, so where I've got this from, Robert Plowman, who's a behavioral geneticist. It's a stat in his book called The Blueprint, and he talks to this from all the research they've looked at over the years in things like identical twin studies and identical twins separated at birth and adoption studies and so on. And from the meta-analysis and from all the research that they've gathered, they're sitting at 50% is genetic, and then the other 50% is the environment. And you've got this really interesting phenomenon within that, which is what they call the nature of nurture as well, which is this idea that what we think is environmental is actually still biased by our biology. So I'll give you an example that, let's say I am genetically more of an introvert, let's say, and some of that, you know, 50% of that is driven by my biology. And then my parents, when I'm growing up, treat me differently. So let's say they give me less hugs and stuff like that. So they're treating me, they're not hugging me as much or whatever it might be. Now you'd think to yourself, right, well, that's an environmental push on that person. So the fact that the parent didn't hug them, that's environmental, that's playing out for their behaviors, you know, over time. But the nature of nurture argument is the reason why the parent isn't giving that person the hug is because they're responding to that person's natural introversion. So the reason why I'm bringing that up is because, yeah, the research is saying 50%. And then there's also this piece of the nature of nurture, which also adds a little bit more on the biological end. Not to say it's more than, but the evidence now that's building in the behavioral genetic space is pretty overwhelming to say that, yeah, like it plays a half of the pie in our overall, traits and talents and personality and so on and so forth. And it's a really interesting conversation because when I go down this road and when you think about it, you know, I'm planning a keynote at the minute around this stuff, and it sounds like the most uninspiring keynote you have ever heard. It's like, here's this guy getting on stage and saying, hey, you know, your behavioral traits, your skills are written into your genes, job done. Like, there's nothing you can do about it. Case closed. And keynote, you know, super uninspiring and unmotivational. But I think what I've come to the conclusion of over the years as we've been dabbling in this space is, if you can actually understand the genetic components, it's still only 50%. That's the really important part. It's only half. The other half is the environment. Okay, so the genetic components of who you are behaviorally, who you are within your natural talents and stuff like that, set, you know, show you what is, not what can be. The what can be part is the, you can still choose to go on the struggles and you can still choose to go against all of your natural biological traits if you want to, or you can choose to align with them. All of that choice is up to you, and you can still grow. Like, you can still achieve, you know, you can still achieve things. You can still improve on the areas that may not be in your genetic court. That's all still within your kind of control. So this idea of the behavioral genetics piece and the way I'm kind of starting to piece this together in what I'm doing now is to say, by understanding it, it's not taking control away. What it's doing is saying, well, at least here's somewhat of a blueprint, or here's some kind of a bit of guidance to go off. Because as you said, most people don't know what the potential is. Most people don't know, you know, what direction they're going. Most people don't know what the natural strengths are. So if we can give you a bit of a framework to say, well, based on your biology, here's what we know. Here's some of the parameters that we know. And with that, go and chase whatever you want to chase, but tap into this and see how it feels. In my opinion, it feels more empowering to give someone that than to go with the far opposite end of the spectrum, which is, you know, you can be whatever you want to be if you just do the work. You know, if at first you don't succeed, try and try again. But then you keep trying because you've got no guidance, you've got no support, and you're actually going in the complete wrong direction because you've not had that guidance. So I think bringing both of those worlds together of understanding what is innate within us biologically and understanding that we still have full control and full choice and we can still choose to do what we want to do. If we can bring those two worlds together, we actually have, we're in a position where we have more of an informed choice. We have more information to play with to actually make better choices to achieve and be who we want to be.
Well argued, son. Good work. Okay, you could have been a lawyer. That was good. No, I like it.
And I'm super interested from your perspective.
No. You're
in the neuroscience world, and hey,
I'm just an old bloke who hosts a podcast. Let's be honest. But I think also, you know. Okay, so this is just what I think. I think I'm with you. I think that genetics plays a bigger role than most people think in everything from personality to body composition to behavior to, you know, things like anxiety and propensity to become a drug addict, to be an addict. Like, genetics play a bigger role than I think most people understand or think. And I think on average across the board, yeah, you like 50% number is, if it's 49, 51, 50, doesn't really matter, but it's about half, which for me kind of resonates. Anyway, it doesn't matter if it resonates for me. I didn't do that research, so I believe you. But I think...
Not a guy, by the way.
But I think
some
also...
very intelligent people.
What really matters is where our focus is and where our attention is and where our energy is on the things that we can manipulate and control. Right. So, of course, I can't change my genetics, but I can, as you said, work with them, for want of a better term. But then I can also figure out, well, what are the things that, you know, and an obvious example, and this could be in any realm, but let's just talk to the process or the goal of getting in shape, whatever that means. But so my genetics, but then around that I can manipulate choices and behaviors and actions and socializing and lifestyle and nutrition and exercise and intensity and volume and sleep and hydration and supplements. And there are so many variables that I can bring into that space of behavior and choice that allow me to maximize or minimize maybe my genetic potential. I think another really interesting thing to think about is some people are really genetically gifted for things that they're not fucking interested in.
Yeah.
Right? Like I did some testing once, and I knew this anyway, but I came up really, really strongly suited for sprint cycling, right? Because right. I naturally have big fucking whopping legs, right? And pretty fast twitch and pretty strong. And, you know, and so, but I have zero interest in being a fucking track cyclist.
Yeah.
You know, not that it's bad, it's just not my thing. And so I think it's, people need to also realize that just because that's what you might be physiologically or genetically predisposed to be good at. Now, we're not talking about health choices here. We're talking about sport.
Yeah.
Then you don't have to be, you know, just because you're 6 foot tall and you've got long levers and great biomechanics and you've got a great VO2 doesn't mean you've got to become an Olympic rower. You know, it just means that should you choose to jump into that, you might be pretty good at it if you have a high pain threshold and you don't mind lots and lots of training and sitting on your ass while pulling oars, you know. I think
that's the really important part, and that is it's the interpretation of it too, because especially so in the sport world, in genes in sport, you know, there's clear genes that'll code for fast twitch muscle fibers and so on and so forth. Like, you can really see, you know, the outcome of what, if you've got that, then the outcome is, so just like you just said there, you know, you've got big whopping legs. It's like, I know that it's designed for this and that's the outcome that I can get. But you can also take that natural strength, let's say that natural ability, and go, right, well, where else can that be applied? And that, again, that's the control point that you still possess. So if I was to switch that to the, the behavioral world, let's say, with, you know, your natural strengths and talents. I'll give you an example. In my profile, it'll say, it actually says, due to progesterone conversion and certain genes, I will be more aware of what people think about me. So that's in my profile. So I've got, I'm the type of personality that will care about what people think. Okay. So it's like, cool. So I can still choose what I do with that. So, and this is the idea of understanding your strengths and weaknesses, and also understanding that often where there's a perceived weakness is actually a strength on the other side of it. It's just not been interpreted or perceived that way. So I could look at that and go, right, well, you know, I know I'm going to come on a podcast with Tiff and Craig, and I know that I'm going to do this podcast, and afterwards I'm going to sit there and ruminate for the next 4 days about how I spoke on it and, you know, how it was going and what people are going to think. And I know that's just a part of, you know, the biology, let's say. Now I can fall victim to that and say, well, you know, that's it. I should never public speak. I should never go out there and get on podcasts because I just have the genes that say that I care what people think, you know, woe is me. And that's the end of it. Or I could choose to go, okay, well, where are the strengths that lie in that? Well, the strengths that lie in that are, I'm more empathetic, that, you know, I'm good at, so when I'm on stage doing a keynote and I'm looking around the room as I'm presenting, I can see or feel that that audience's response, and with that information actually change my presentation. So again, like I love what you're saying before about, you know, you might have a certain set of skills, but you're not necessarily wanting to engage with those skills in the way that is kind of been laid out for you. So like, you know, you look at a Usain Bolt, he's obviously genetically gifted and trained his whole life to sprint really, really fast. He was very, very interested in playing football, but it didn't quite work out for him.
Hmm.
So like, imagine if he was like, well, you know, I've got these genes and I've been told that I should play football and I'm trying to play football, but it isn't working. But yet we could actually take that same physiology, those same genes, put them in a different environment over here, and he'll actually excel. So I think that's the really important piece of this too, is even with these genetic set points, let's say, you can still choose how you engage with those traits, and how you use those traits for better or for worse.
Hmm. Imagine if somebody tested you and they went, you know what, you'd be awesome at, you know, Olympic swimming. What do you want to do? You go, I want to be an opera singer. You go, ah, oh, what, I feel like that, you know,
lung capacity will work in both ways there.
Well, think about how many people are in the world, and probably how many people are listening to this that would have been, from a genetics point of view, if they had have taken the genetics and the potential that they have and been in the right environment with the right people and the right opportunities and resources, how many people could have, not that this is the high watermark for success, but just out of curiosity, could have become an elite something, tennis player, swimmer, AFL player, NFL player, NBA player, you know, anything, WNBL, WNBA, you know, like any elite athlete, or even, you know, sometimes people who like comedians or actors, or where they maybe had as much or more talent than people who are currently competing or performing at an elite level, but that door was never opened. You know, like when, on a really, really much simpler level, like when I grew up in the country, and, you know, we, most of the kids, I said this recently on a podcast, so I'm apologize for repeating myself, everyone, but you know, most of us, we either got a job, a regular job, just whatever, in retail or in, you know, some kind of 9-to-5 or a bank or doing something, or we became a, we got a trade, we became a tradie, or probably about 5% went to university, but I would say 95% didn't, right? Now, because of the time that I grew up in, the environment that I grew up in, that was, you know, there was no emphasis at all on academia past year 12. Like if you did year 12, you're a bit of a genius, right? Like, because like my dad finished school at year 8 or year 9, and my mum finished school same, I think. And then, you know, to actually go and do year 12 for quite in the 60s and 70s, not that many people went to year 12. And then in the 80s, and it kind of course, it's really evolved. But I wonder how many people, like I even think about my mum and dad. My dad is quite gifted with a lot of things, and my mum also. I think, wow, imagine if they, you know, they were 15 years old today, what, and not that what they did was bad or not, you know, worthwhile, but I wonder, given a different opportunity and a different time with different resources, what they might have done, you know. And I think that, and this speaks a little bit to potential and self-awareness, is being able to realize that all of us right now, and apart from the genetics, of course, which, as we know, plays a massive role, but we're all largely a byproduct of our programming and our training. And even the way that we think and the way that everybody thinks right now listening to this is largely influenced by the way they've been taught and told and trained and programmed to process life. You know, and so to be able to be in the middle of, I know this is long, but to be in the middle of whatever you currently live in and go, oh, like I've often thought, I wonder if I grew up in a different place with different parents in a different culture, but I was the same person, I wonder what I'd be like, you know? Or I wonder if I grew up where my dad was a tennis pro, I wonder if I would have started playing tennis at 4 and I would have become a tennis pro.
Yeah. You know?
Or I wonder if my dad was a surgeon and my mum was a research professor, I wonder if I had have grown up and I would have fucking finished school at 16 and had my first degree at 19 and a PhD at 22, you know, it's like, it's really interesting. And I think to be able to think beyond for ourselves now to go, look, what's, because one thing that we do, I know I'm jumping around, but is we pigeonhole ourselves without even knowing that we're doing it. You know, we go, oh, I'm now, my sister's the creative one. Yeah. I'm not, or I'm not sporting, or I could never start a business. And that belief is based on the fact that I haven't started a business yet. So therefore my story is I couldn't. Oh, how many times have you tried? Zero. Well, how the fuck do you know? You know, and this, and I think the challenge is, you know, you're 30, you're 40, you're 50, and you're in the middle of your life. And this idea of living consciously and tapping into your potential and exploring your genetic possibilities. And for the average punter who just gets up every day and grinds and hustles and works and looks after their kids or goes to the gym or, you know, does what they do, and then they wake up and it's 2025. Like, how do you, what are your ideas around stepping out of the groundhog dayness of our existence and into our potential? And into our genetic possibilities and into what might be beyond what currently is.
Yeah, I mean, with that,
by the way, good luck answering that 10-minute question.
Yeah, I love that. It was great. So I'd say, yeah, it is a case of trying to snap out of the routine, because obviously we are creatures of habit and we will just fall into that kind of groundhog day, repeat, and then there's, you know, 5 or 10 years gone by. One of the things we look for and one of the things we try and get people to do is become aware of where there's flow and where it feels like there's resistance. And, you know, a really easy way of, and you know, a lot of people's natural strengths and talents are often in things that they don't necessarily see as strengths. So whenever I take people through like a strengths finding exercise, one of the first questions I'll ask people is, what do you do every day that just comes naturally to you, that you don't give any credit, that you wouldn't even classify as a strength? So it's this whole idea of just stepping out of, you know, the habit of what you're doing, zooming out for a second and asking yourself some questions such as that, to say, well, where do the strengths lie? You know, because there's certain things that you might be doing that you don't give yourself credit for that are actually really good strengths. And then saying, right, well, with that, how can we apply that somewhere else? Like, how can you use that towards that greater vision that you may have? So I think the first thing is reflect on purpose. I think taking time out of the routines and of the day-to-day to actually stop and say, you know, why am I doing this? If, you know, if it's the career that you're chasing, or it's the routine that you've got, why am I in this routine? What is the greater purpose of it? And I think having a bit of space and time to reflect and say, you know, ask that question allows you to really understand your deeper why of being. You know, it helps you to find that kind of North Star that, you know, when the shit hits the fan and things are going crazy, you've kind of got a direction as to where you want to go. You know, the one thing, you've got the one thing that you can kind of aim towards, and then you just, at least you've got some level of direction. And I suppose then with that, it allows you to trial and error and go through the hardships. And as you said at the start of today, it allows you to go through the struggle and grow through the struggle, and then from that, learn from that experience and keep moving forward. So I think the first thing is take a step back and ask why, you know, what is the deeper purpose, and tap into that and try and get clear on what that might be. And again, it's not meant to be like a Tony Robbins, you've got this perfect purpose vision written out and it's stuck on your wall and you know exactly where you're going. It can evolve, it can change. It might start off as a big unclear paragraph. It might condense as it goes. But I think if we actually give ourselves a bit of space to just tap into that and find what's meaningful and set that as the North Star, and then it's a case of move towards it. Like, in any, as ugly as it might be in any way, shape or form, just start taking proactive steps to moving towards that. And then from that, start to gain the awareness of where these strengths might lie and where these weaknesses might lie and where it feels less resistant and where they feel, it feels like there's more flow, and navigate with that. And, you know, this is where we bring the genetics piece in for exactly that, because for people that are completely like, you know, they don't have any idea, or they're trying to get more of an understanding of where their strengths lie and how they can utilize their natural strengths to move forward to achieve the purpose. It gives them a bit of a framework to play off. So for example, you know, I'll do a contrast to give this a little bit more like understanding. So there's two phenotypes that will characterize based off their personality traits, let's say, and some of their strengths and weaknesses. So you've got one, which we call the diplomat, who their natural strengths, they're serotonin driven. So they're a little bit more, they're pleasure seekers. They're night owls, which is really important. So they should actually take things easy in the morning. They shouldn't be stressing the system in the morning. They are very, very considered. So their natural strengths, from what we see genetically, is their capacity to think about every single outcome and every single contingency is incredible. But for their brain to process that way, they need more time and space to make decisions. Okay. Now, the shadow of that strength, the weakness of that strength, is rumination. Perfectionism, inaction. So they overthink, and there's always another if then but in the decision making, and they think that much, and there's that many different options, they overwhelm themselves with the options and they don't do anything at all. Okay. The opposite to them is what we call the activator, and the activator phenotype, that's TIFF, which is like high fiving already. So higher in testosterone, adrenaline. Very present focused. Their natural strengths are in lateral thinking, problem solving, dealing with acute stress. So they're really good at just like turning on a dime, being agile in both body and mind, and solving problems. Okay, so you've got two people here. Let's say we get these two people and they join a company, and you know the vision, the purpose of the company is to, I don't know, eliminate chronic disease on the planet. Let's say, so they're aligned in purpose. Okay. So you've got two people aligned in purpose, moving towards this goal. Now you take the activator and you put them on reception, and all they do all day is they copy paste, enter information, you know, monotonous rote learning type task, and the brain's jumping all over the place, and they're wanting to think outside the box and make up new ways of working the system, and they break rules. That's a strength of theirs, is they break rules, because on the good side of that, so be wary of this, Craig. They break rules. But the strength to breaking rules is innovation, yeah? So they think outside the box and they create new ideas. And so they go to the boss and they say, hey, this really boring task I've been doing, I've innovated, I've changed it up, I'm actually more efficient now, and here's how I want to roll it out. And the boss says, don't want to hear it. We've done it this way for 15 years. Just go back to the job that I asked you to do, which is copy paste information for 8 hours straight, so on and so forth. You see where I'm going with this, right? So you've got a person that's aligned in purpose, but now they're sitting there stressed, frustrated, agitated, not feeling in flow. Their brain's jumping all over the place. They think they've got ADHD or something because they can't focus on the task. And now they've got a choice, is one, I really need to get better at this job. You know, I just need to be able to focus more. I'm going to download a self-help book on greater willpower and focus, and they work really hard on trying to focus more, and their brain's jumping all over the place. Or two, look to create an environment that allows those natural strengths that they now understand about themselves to come to life, and maybe pass that job to the diplomat, who's great with the spreadsheets and great with the data and so on and so forth. So that was a really long-winded and I jumped around a bit there. But I suppose what I'm saying is when you have an understanding of some of these innate natural strengths that are built within you and you're navigating through life towards your greater purpose and you're feeling these areas of discomfort or, well, not discomfort, these areas of stagnation or resistance, understanding this stuff can actually help you to see why that resistance may be there and how you can actually navigate and deal with that in a different way.
Love it. All right. So I think I'm just sitting listening to you, fascinating, by the way, and I'm thinking half of my listeners right now are going, I heard Dr. Cam a year and a half ago. I kind of remember what he was talking about. I know it's something about genetics and classifications and we're all different and how that. So can you in 5 minutes, can you just, because I want people to try to figure out based on the system that you use so people can decide which, what do you call them?
Where they might sit.
What classification or what group they're in. So you've spoken about, so I'm going to ask, so just give me a quick snapshot of an activator.
So activator, high testosterone, adrenaline, lateral thinkers, problem solvers, do first, think later. They're musculoskeletal dominant in the development. So everything's about action. It's like they're built to move. Think Energizer Bunny, okay?
Right.
Shorter, stockier, shorter and leaner, let's say, more athletic in build, and they're just built to do. Do first, think later.
Okay, diplomat.
So the diplomat's all about time and space, pleasure seeking. That's driven by serotonin. So serotonin is like the neurotransmitter that essentially comes after you achieve an accomplishment. They're night owls. So they need to take time out in the morning to take it easy. Raising cortisol in the morning isn't really good for their physiology. So slow and steady in the morning. And then they can pick it up in the afternoon, which, you know, it goes against Western culture. Western culture is all about get up early, get stuff done, you know, own the day from, you know, join the 5 a.m. club and that kind of thing. And for these guys, in actual fact, they'll be more productive in the afternoon if they take it easy in the morning. So, yeah, very, very different. You can see activator is go, 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 do first, think later. Diplomat is all about taking time, considering, thinking, and then making a decision once all of the outcomes have kind of been tracked. And you can see where, you know, without awareness, these two people come together. And you've got one that wants to do first, think later, and that looks like a great strength. And then you've got one down here that is taking time to think. And to the activator, that looks like a weakness. It's like, why are you not taking action? Do it now. But for the diplomat, it's like, well, hang on a minute. Why are you not thinking this through? Why are you missing all the details? So again, back to the point I made before, when you understand this stuff, you understand that there's strengths and weakness on both sides of the coin, but it's just about how you engage and interact with that.
All right. So activator, diplomat, tell me about the connector.
So the connector is oxytocin driven. So these guys are the ultimate extroverts. Okay. So they actually gain energy when they're around people. So they need to be around people. Oxytocin is obviously the bonding hormone. They actually feel really good when they're around people. So that, you know, the life and soul of the party, we often call them like the puppy dog because they're just so, you know, they can be really excitable. Visual processors. So you'll find they'll use more of the occipital lobe. So really, really good at like visual cues and, everything for them is a trust game. So you'll find that they'll, and you never tell them this, but they're amazing at sales naturally because they're so good at, you know, adapting and being a bit of a chameleon to meet people where they're at to gain that kind of trust. So that's the big one for the connectors is positive social environments and being around really positive people. The opposite to that is the sensor, and they're the ultimate introvert. So vasopressin is their dominant hormone, and what will vasopressin is a hormone that's usually used for electrolyte regulation and fluid regulation in the body. But interestingly, in the behavioral side of things, those higher in vasopressin show more traits of jealousy and monogamous behavior. So oxytocin, if you think oxytocin is all about, in essence, it's polygamy. It's like, let's make lots of relationships. Vasopressin is more of a one-to-one type thing, and it makes sense because when you understand the physiology of the sensor, they're longer, they're leaner, they've got smaller bones, less body fat, less muscle tissue, and they're dominant through the nervous system. So it's the I won't go into too much science, but it's the ectoderm layer of the embryo is where the brain, skin, and central nervous system develop, and they have a dominance in that, in the development of that layer of the embryo. So they're very, very neurologically wired, which makes sense biologically as to why behaviorally it might benefit you to be more of an introvert. You know, you wouldn't want the personality of the connector, because then you're going to be running out into the world, partying all the time, flashing lights, music, lots of people. And you've got this very sensitive nervous system and lean physiology that has to take on all of that stress. So it's just really interesting. The physiology and the mind map very, very closely together with this stuff.
All right. Tell us about the last two. What is it? Crusader and Guardian.
Yeah, Crusaders. So I'm a Crusader. Crusaders are dopamine driven. So they're very future orientated. They're always looking at that kind of big picture approach. We kind of give them the nickname the racehorse, because they can become very, you know, tunnel vision and focused on the achievement of the goal that they're working towards. And again, it's a great strength to have that great physical and mental endurance. So you'll see a lot of triathletes, Tour de France athletes, all of those types of physiology. So A, they've got the genetics physically for that endurance type sport, but also when you add the high dopamine and things like that, they've got the behavioral aspect to be able to endure long term too. But again, I suppose the weakness on the other side of the strength is that tunnel vision, that high focus turns into rigidity, and they miss the periphery often. So, you know, these are the types of people that are forgetting to drink water and forgetting to eat food and you know, forgetting to spend time with the loved ones because they're so hell-bent on achieving that purpose in life. Whereas if we go to the final one, which is the Guardian, they're the opposite to the Crusader, and they're actually driven by prolactin. And what's interesting in the body, dopamine and prolactin sit on an axis. So when dopamine's high, prolactin drops, and vice versa. And what we know about prolactin is, from a behavioral standpoint, is it's those that are higher in prolactin display more nurture-based behaviors. So they'll be more caring, more nurturing. So it's the opposite of the narrowing effect of dopamine, which is I'm focusing on my goals. And it's more of a, I'm here to support everybody else's goals and nurture and protect everybody else.
Now, you two, I've got a question for both of you, but you can't communicate. So from this point until I say go, I don't want you to talk. I'm going to do a little ad. And while I'm doing the ad, I want you to both independently write down what you think I am. I don't want you to communicate with each other. I want you to both write what you think Craig Harper is on a piece of paper, big enough that I can see it, because I'm going to go 1, 2, 3. And I know this is not a visual medium that we're in, but it is for me. 1, 2, 3. And you're both going to hold it up at the same time. And I'm going to see if you get the same answer. So don't keep it down, Tiff. All right, now while they're doing that, while they're deciding whether or not I'm an activated diplomat, connector, sensor, crusader, or guardian, I am going to tell you, everyone, that we've got a new mentoring program starting on, I think it's August 13, and we've got a workshop the week before, which is Ungiveuppable. And also we've got the beanies coming in. So they will be in next week. The U Project beanies, all the profit from that is going to the Danny Frawley Foundation, which I'm a big, big proud supporter of. And of course, Danny was on the show about 6 months, sadly, before 6 months before he passed away, talking about suicide and suicide prevention and mental health and all of those things. So we love him and we miss him. But they're coming in next week, the beanies and the mentoring program, which is 6 weeks. Week one kicks off on August 13, which is a Wednesday. And the workshop Ungiveuppable is the week before, which is the 7th. And you can find both of those on the website, craigharper.net, and go to events. All right, on one, on three, you guys ready?
Now, are we doing this based on what we think you are, or?
You're doing it based on what you think I am.
Right. So, yeah, because we had this chat last time and I reckon I've been thinking about it, Craig. So I reckon...
All right. I don't want you to talk about it. Ready? On three. One, and I'm going to tell you what they both hold up, everyone. So on three, I want you to hold it up to your camera so I can see. 1, 2, 3.
Oh.
Connector and connector.
Wow. Yes.
Okay. Connector and connector. All right. So... tell me about it.
I'm going to go even further as to say put him towards the guardian side of connector.
Right.
I think he's got strong guardian traits in terms of caring for people.
All right. Tell me why you think I'm that. And of course, for those people who are wondering, you're a PH360. What are you, a coach?
Yep.
Okay, so tell me why you, and by the way, everyone, I've never had this done, so I don't know what the fuck's going on. This is not a setup. I've never been evaluated. I think it's all dog shit, of course, but you know, no, that's not true at all. I think it's actually brilliant science. But I've never done the test and I've never done the course and I've never, so for me, this is real time and interesting. All right, Tiff. So you said I'm a connector with a bit of guardian. What is that? Why do you think that?
Because of the quality of your relationships with everybody, your interactions and the joy you get from the relationships. And when you train, you always have a training partner, and connectors get the most out of their training when everything they do, they have to enjoy, and they enjoy it with the quality of their relationships. And I say on the guardian side, so every health type sits next to another, and you can sit at one side. For example, I sit right on the cusp of Crusader. So I'm an activator, but when you talk about Crusader, I have some of those traits. So I think also the way that you nurture people makes me always, because I wondered for a long time, like, where would you sit? And, you know, are you a guardian or are you a connector?
All right. What do you think, Kyle, and why?
So on our last episode together, you whipped your top off and started giving it a big flex to the camera.
That's not true. I took my pants off, so don't be ridiculous.
But one of the things I noticed, mate, great biceps, but you've got a really round peak to the bicep, and that's a classic sign for a meso-endo combination or a connector. So that was the first thing. Second thing, Joe Rogan is also a connector, and I think anybody, you know, with connector traits, they've got an incredible ability to storytell and also hold conversation like this. And, you know, it's got to be connectors that can make a living out of podcasts, surely. So, yeah, I think just your natural ability to have conversation, storytell, your incredible physique, mate, with the round musculature.
Don't be ridiculous.
It's all there. Yeah.
And now tell me, thank you for the compliment for my left bicep, but tell me also, what am I genetically suited for? Like, tell me a bit more about the connector slash or the connector body type. Like, what's my drug? What's the drug that works for me, or my neurotransmitter or whatever?
So oxytocin's the key. I think from a physiological standpoint, what we'll see is the connector body is the most resilient in that high training volumes. They can take on a higher training volume. When you look at like the CrossFit games, you'll find a lot of the winners of the CrossFit games sit between the activated connector end and more connectors, because they've got the agility and explosiveness of the activator, but also have the resilience of the guardian, because they're a bit of a mix. So you'll find, you know, what we often see when we train connectors is they can work across rep ranges. They can be quite skilled in, you know, the explosive stuff as well as the strength-based stuff. And it takes a lot to burn them out, like truly, like it takes a lot of exercise volume to actually to put them out. So that's some of the stuff we see there.
Can I comment to that? That is actually very true, because I have a weird mix of power, which is for my body weight and age, good, and my strength, good, and my muscular endurance, maybe even better, which doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't. Yeah, like you guys seem to have it.
From an exercise science point of view, it doesn't, to have, you know, power and muscular endurance, they're almost conflicting. But I, you know, I don't mean I'm elite, but like quite good in strength, power, and muscular endurance, which is weird.
Yeah. So we see that. We see from a predisposition point of view, and this is not to scare you, by the way, because again, we can control our outcomes with our lifestyle choices. That's really important. But we'll see things like issues with high blood pressure, issues with cardiovascular disease and oxidative stress. So with our recommendations, we often have them more on, if you were going to ascribe a fad, and you know, a really big disclaimer, we make sure we personalize nutrition more than just kind of bracket it as though I'm about to, but if I was going to prescribe a fad, it'd be more along the, and it's not really a fad actually, it'd be more along the pescatarian approach. So it'd be moderate amounts to low amounts of red meat, higher amounts of your oily fish, vegetables, more of that type of approach, omega-3s, antioxidants, that type of thing. And then from a behavioral strength standpoint, as I mentioned before, like you guys are the, you know, the people, your ability to connect with people, to build relationships, natural salespeople, but you just don't tell them that because it feels icky to sell because they're not selling. They're just doing what they do, which is building relationships, building rapport, building connection. And they need variety. They need variety in their life. This is a big one. This is what I find really fascinating is, you know, we were just talking about how your body has the ability to switch between so many different modalities. But what's interesting is your physiology showcases that, but your psychology also needs that too. So you actually will need to change things up often in your life and have variety and have fun and have new stimulus. Otherwise, you might find you get bored quite easily and get a bit of magpie syndrome happening, the shiny things.
That's so true. Like with my career, I've done so many things over the years. And I get, even if it's something that I really like, I get bored eventually. And I don't need to stop doing it, but maybe do it a different way.
Yeah. And you know, on that, because this is really important thing, you're doing a PhD, right? Now that requires you to deep dive into a subject. So it's not a case of working at the surface level. Doing a PhD, you have to become a specialist. You have to go right down into the depths of that subject. Now, this is coming full circle to what we spoke about at the start, because if I was to, you know, give you those characteristics and label you as a connector, you could take that information and go, oh, well, I don't have the strengths genetically then to deep dive into a subject to, you know, I'm going to get bored easily. I'm going to want to look for the next thing. And while those things may be true, I don't know, you tell me, it doesn't mean you can't do it. But when you're aware of these things, it just means you have to engage with that process and do it in a different way to suit who you are. And I think that's the really empowering part of the conversation that I really want to get across to people is knowing this stuff. You don't want to use it as an excuse to, you know, use it as an excuse to kind of put yourself down or not engage. Like, an often one we see is with the diplomats, but when we tell them about their natural need to consider and the fact that they might be a perfectionist and ruminate sometimes, often people will take that information and go, oh, you know, I'm not taking action because I'm doing that diplomat thing. I'm just, you know, that's just who I am. And they associate with that part of themselves and use it as a cop-out. And that's not the way it needs to be used. It needs to be used from a place of, oh, with awareness. Yes, I have that genetic tendency. Yes, I do that. Yes, I'm doing that right now. But now I know that I can step out of that and actually look at a way of dealing with this in this situation to transcend that trait. That's the thing. We still have the ability and the control to transcend those behavioral traits or interact with them in a different way to get the outcome that we're looking for. So, you know, in your instance, doing a PhD, the way you go about doing a PhD would be very, very different, in my opinion, if I was working with you, than the traditional academic approach.
Yes, I'm pretty sure my approach is not the traditional academic one. I want to be everyone's friend at uni, and they all just keep running away. I'm not sure why. And by the way, there's no lunch break. There's no morning play or afternoon play. There are no monkey bars. There's no sandpit, and no one has a pencil case. I'm not sure what's going on. Things have really changed, but we do what we can. Now, mate, if people want to connect with, that was fascinating, by the way, but we'll wind it up. If people want to connect with you, how do they go about that?
Yeah, you can hit me up on LinkedIn. So just Kyle Riley on LinkedIn. Otherwise on Instagram, KRiley_PH360. I'm going to apologize to your listeners because I've definitely had a few extra followers since popping on here, mate. So I appreciate you putting it out there, but I'm going to apologize to your listeners because I am terrible on social media. I hardly ever post. So I feel like your incredible listeners are coming to follow me to see what I'm up to and I'm not posting anything. So I will try to improve that process.
Now, what are you again?
I'm a crusader.
You're a crusader. Is that representative of crusaders? Are they shit at social media?
Unless it's the purpose, if it's their greater purpose to be killing it on social media, then they'll chase those numbers. But yeah.
Well, mate, I expect you to step up, and so do our listeners. You need to come up with some, I tell you what, 3 a week. That's what I expect over the next 4 weeks. That's your goal. 12 posts, something a bit insightful, no pressure. See, I'm coaching you and connecting with you free of charge. Tiffany Ann Cook, good work, you.
Coach me a crusader away as well. You had give me objective goals to hit, which is right up my alleyway.
Perfect. Well, 3 weeks, next 4 weeks, that's 12 over the next four. We'll regroup. We'll see from there. And when then we'll reset, reload, and off we go again. You're welcome. That'll be $10. Stay there, mate. All right, everyone. Thank you, Tiff. Thank you, Kyle. Thanks, everyone, for joining in for the 502nd time. We will see you next time.